Hi, I'm Gary from Stonyfield, the organic yogurt company. We started making yogurt as a way to fund an organic farming school, and 28 years later, our mission is still all about healthy food, healthy people, and a healthy planet. Today, we support 200,000 acres of organic family farms, and we give 10% of our profits to efforts that protect and restore the earth. So we're proud to support thoughtful programming like Living on Earth, and hope you will too. Donate at loe.org.
Let's take a wild trip to a tame place. Traffic zips along Route 128. Known as America's high-tech highway, it circles Boston, passing through densely populated suburbs. Here in Aubendale, 12 miles due west of Boston, just off the highway, the flow of traffic is replaced by the flow of the Charles River. Sounds of the roadway fade and nature takes over. Here at a historic Victorian boathouse, there are kayaks to rent. I take two. One for me and a double for my producer, who will ride shotgun with the author of a new book about nature and the environment.
My name is David Gessner, and I'm a professor of creative writing at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. At this point, I've been cast as kind of a nature writer. There are times I rebel against that. I mean, I feel like nature is part of everything I work on, just like it's part of my life. I don't feel like I want to be defined solely by it.
In his latest book, David Gessner searches for redefinition. It's titled My Green Manifesto, Down the Charles River in Pursuit of a New Environmentalism. Kayaking the river seemed the natural thing to do while talking to Gessner about his book. We strap on life jackets, grab paddles, and squeeze into kayaks.
All right, let's set off.
I put my recorder into a plastic bag and my microphone on top of the boat. We push off from the dock and paddle a few yards. Then my cell phone rings, I grab for it, and knock my mic into the water. What a jerk. I fish it out, fearing the worst.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Well, it didn't take me long to ruin my microphone. I dropped it right in.
Luckily, my producer Daniel Gross brought along another microphone. And the three of us set off again, paddling and talking about the 80-mile journey David Gessner took along the length of the Charles River that inspired him to write My Green Manifesto.
Well, it was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, honestly. That's why I put the "my" in front of My Green Manifesto. I didn't claim it was going to be the end-all, be-all of environmentalism. I feel it was my green groping wouldn't sound quite as good. And really what it was is groping toward some ideas about environmentalism that I had been developing for years and trying to break out of being paralyzed by my previous thoughts about the environment. Those thoughts included a sense that we're all doomed, a sense that everything I did was fairly impotent, and just an overall sense of hopelessness. And what I came up with in this book was what I would call a limited environmentalism, a smaller environmentalism, but hopefully a more effective environmentalism.
There's thousands and tens of thousands of rivers you could have gone on, but you chose to go on this river, the Charles River. Why? I mean, this is not remote, it's not romantic, it's an urban river.
Particularly because of that. I felt that you don't need to go to Everest or the Amazon to experience the wild. And I love the fact that it was a limited river. I love the fact that you cross under 128, the highway. I like the fact that we're floating toward a Marriott hotel right now. And that when we go around the corner, we might see muskrats, herons. And I like the idea of an accessible wildness and wilderness. It really went with my thinking about a limited environmentalism. And we better understand that the way we fight for the environment doesn't have to be pure. And the environment we fight for doesn't have to be pristine and pure.
Well, you don't have to go far to get beautiful here, huh?
Yeah, I think the next turn we're going to start losing the highway sound, too.
We're hearing red-winged blackbirds over there, and we're seeing that's loose strife, the purple.
Well, we got some kids in a kayak here. They're making a racket.
Yeah, well, that's good, right? We're getting the kids out there. That's where it starts. Contact. We need to have that contact.
The word contact occurs again and again in your
brain.
You have to touch it. You have to be in it. You have to be in nature.
I think the missing leg of environmentalism with a capital E was the whole mucking around in the world itself. It seemed like, why would you fight for something? There's a great blue heron right over there going over the loose strife, right?
Ooh, yeah.
The kids just saw that too. That's what they're yelling. This time they're yelling positively, and so you can actually still see it landing. Just cruise ahead, and no one's saying nature is a cakewalk, is easy. What I'm saying is that there are deep pleasures that we're missing out on when we remove it from our lives, or when we push it over into a corner. There's a landing up here, and we can land along the edge right here and climb up the hill into the trees for a little bit.
So where did this book come from? I mean, is it something you always wanted to write, or it just popped in your head one day?
Well, in a way, it built up for years and then popped into my head. And it came in 2007 at a time when environmentalism was suddenly hot. You had Leo DiCaprio on the cover of Vanity Fair next to a polar bear in a supposedly melting ice cap. And you had Gore winning his Nobel Prize for his slideshow. Twisty light bulbs were all the vogue. And what I was saying was that these things are great. Anything that ignites, anything that helps us is great. But we need to have that contact. You know, looking at birds, looking at plants, looking at trees, and that seemed to be missing for me.
We're only a few miles outside of Boston, and it's easy to get here. It's not hard to get to nature.
Well, it's a little hard. We paddled. But I don't know. You know, I do think that the more we're looking, you know, we can hear a siren now here in our little pastoral glen. The more we look at devices, the more we're just not outside, the more strange we get from it, and the more difficult it does seem. But here we are, half an hour into our paddle, and we're seeing things that I, for one, hope my daughter gets out and sees, and her kids get out and see.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
You make it fun. You make it fun, in a word. You remind people, as far as grown-ups, you remind people that having a couple beers around a campfire is joyous, and some of the most wild times you're ever going to have are out there. The fire's heating your face. You've got this kind of primal thing going on. You're having fun. You're beyond social boundaries and bonds. It's not some church-like experience only. It can be that. It can be spiritual, but it can also be really fun. And for kids, it's easy to make it fun. Granted, we heard a bunch of kids screaming bloody murder back there, but I've had enough experiences taking kids out canoeing and kayaking to know that at least some of them start to get the bug a little bit.
But what about the despair? Global warming, the price of gas keeps on going up, and we use more of it. And how do you reconcile that? How do you just not throw up your hands and say, you know, I give up?
Horrible things are happening. I mean, I know the population is skyrocketing, that species are dying out. But my question is, okay, and then what? What do we do? The tendency when you think about these things is to get into kind of the intellectual equivalent of a panic attack. It's like living with a spouse who's always saying, this marriage is over, this marriage is over, the world is doomed. Well, what do you do with that? What do you do when you're in a panic attack? You constrict, you tighten up, you don't do anything, you get paralyzed. And what I say is, okay, maybe these things are true, but you still get up in the morning, you still drink your coffee, make your things to-do list, go to work. If we are an environmentalism that works against human nature, we're going to lose. You know, we'll have an army of none.
You don't use the word wilderness. You use the word wild. What's the difference?
To me, wilderness means some park somewhere far from your home, apart from your life. And what I'm advocating is a wildness that is part of your daily life. I mention in the book that seeing my daughter's birth and my father's death were the two wildest moments of my life, and I compare them to seeing breaching humpback whales on Cape Cod Bay. To me, that's every bit as wild. And we forget that we're animals too. And we all know it intellectually, but we really do kind of forget it. We're like, okay, that's over there, that sloppy, green, messy biological stuff, and we're over here in our other world.
So you can reconcile the wild world because it's all one. We're part of
it. Exactly, exactly. Where the Charles starts, I saw a lot of wooded banks, I saw marshes, but I also saw backyards with old tire swings and broken down docks. And I thought, how lucky these people are who live along this river. They've got a normal front yard, and then they've got a watery secret in their backyard. And to me, that's a taste of wildness, even if it isn't a wild river, per se.
What's the secret?
The secret is that they are connected to a larger world, and I particularly like rivers for this. I have a very close friend who lives off of Temple Stream. He's a writer in Maine. I live off of Hewlett Creek in North Carolina. If we were ever feeling particularly ambitious, we could meet around Washington, D.C. John Muir said, pick up one thing in the universe and you find it's hitched to everything else. Well, rivers hitch you to everything else.
David, what is that bird right over there? You see him?
That's an egret. Looking over, it's looking to snap down into the water to catch a fish right now.
You say in the book that this is a young adult book. What do you mean by that?
Well, a couple years ago, I went to Walden with my wife and my daughter, who was then 4 years old, and she pointed to the stones that were where Thoreau's cabin was and said, that's where the house was of the man who ruined Daddy's life. When I was 16, I read Walden, and, you know, it's been downhill ever since. I want to do the same for some 16-year-olds. And at one point in the book, I just said, you know who I'm really writing this for? I'm writing this for the 16-year-old who used to be me. You know, I'm writing this for somebody deciding, what am I going to do with my life? What am I going to throw myself into? And maybe I can encourage some people to throw themselves into a life that has a mission and a goal, but also has something to do with the natural world. So it was a more consciously inspirational book than anything I've done before.
Are you happy with the book?
Yes. I'm happy with the combination of humor and direct moralizing of the sort you usually wouldn't hear outside of church. I'm happy with the kind of shaggy, unformed character. I meant it to be as meandering as the river, and I think it's pretty meandering. So, yes.
Well, David, back to civilization.
Yeah, and quite the civilization. If the point of the book is to get kids involved in nature, we came to the right place.
You succeeded blindly. Thanks a lot for a great day.
Thank you so much, Bruce.
David Gessner is author of My Green Manifesto, Down the Charles River in Pursuit of a New Environmentalism. For some photos of our trip down the Charles, paddle over to our website, loe.org. And by the way, my microphone dried out, and it works fine.